Our world is changing, and we have no option but to evolve with it. In this ever-evolving world, one domain embracing the wave of innovation is the sports industry. From sports analytics to IoT in sports and fitness, the adoption of technology is increasing by the day. What will the intersection of sport and technology look like in a few years? In this episode, we sit with Yama Saraj, a wealth of expertise and a passionate leader of change, using creativity, innovation, and technology, coupled with the power of fundraising for young entrepreneurs using venture capital. In short, he is a techie at heart, economist in mind, and artist in spirit. Enjoy today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Big Spark. Big Spark is the UK's fastest growing data solutions consultancy, translating your business needs into data architecture, strategy, and engineering. Together with their technical partners, they focus on swift and efficient business value delivery. Taking an innovative approach to every challenge, Big Spark is an agile team of over 100 world-class engineers and data scientists pushing the boundaries of what can be achieved with AI, data, software, cloud, and machine learning. To find out how Big Spark can ignite your data solution, visit us at www.bigspark.dev. Big Spark, igniting change through engineering. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the TechSurf podcast, where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. And today I have a friend that I met some time back in a very interesting stage in my life back in France to, you know, join us, and has a very intriguing background to join us, have a discussion about different stuff, you know. He's a plethora of expertise, I will call him. So I wouldn't want to spoil. I will let Yama go ahead and introduce himself. So Yama, introduce yourself in the shortest possible time.
Thank you very much, Raymond. A pleasure to be in your show. So awesome. So my name is Yama Saraj. I'm 37 years old. I am from the Netherlands. I have roots from Afghanistan. And I'm currently based in Paris, and I'm the founder of Sensei Technologies.
That's nice. That's nice. Ooh, that's very nice. So yeah, Yama, it's nice to have you on. It's really nice to have you on. So you did mention that you're from the Netherlands. Tell us a bit about, you know, growing up in the Netherlands. When did you leave Netherlands? Let's talk about the transition from childhood into the other places that you've had to live in.
Well, let's start from the beginning. So I was born in Afghanistan, in Kabul, 1985. Unfortunately, Afghanistan has been war-torn for a very long time, and this misery and doesn't seem to be ending. So that's the sadness about Afghanistan. But nevertheless, we were very privileged. We could get the hell out of there on time. We could get to the Netherlands in 1989. I think I was 11 or 12, and we got a political asylum in the Netherlands. My mom was a professor in veterinary, and she had some students in the Netherlands, and I think they told her, like, hey, come here with your family. You can get political asylum. In those times, there was quite a good climate, political climate for migration. Now, unfortunately, a little less. Nevertheless, we were very well received, and we came to the Netherlands in 1988, too long in France. I went through the Dutch education system. Of course, it was challenging in the beginning to pick up the language, the culture shock, and you go to the asylum system. But it went pretty well, and as a child, of course, you experienced that differently. Nevertheless, yeah, we ended up in a small village in the south of the Netherlands. I went through the Dutch education system, and it was quite interesting. Unfortunately, we had this right-wing populism rising up, and I think post 9/11, I think I was confronted with this, where do I belong? And this existential crisis has actually led me a lot in my own entrepreneurial endeavor.
Right.
I went to study engineering because I had this idea like, oh, I have to go back to my country of origin and I want to contribute to reconstruction efforts.
Right.
But soon I would see like, okay, engineering is great, but in the end, this commerce people or policy people, they control everything. So I pivoted, actually. That was my pivot. I think I studied 3 years industrial engineering, and after my internship, I thought, no, I'm not going to stay here. Not this in region. It was a little bit provincial mindset, this region, you know, south of the Netherlands. And I wanted to have an international experience and international orientation. So I went to the nearby city called Tilburg, and I studied economics there. And I found very passion in development economics. And I did a master in strategic management. And yeah, I had a very much interest in international development. And growing up in the Netherlands, I realized, wow, this is such a rich country, very innovative, with the best engineering in water systems, in agriculture, and energy systems. So my endeavor is always to bring these technologies to developing countries, and maybe notably my country of origin, Afghanistan.
I think that's what I liked about you, because when I first spoke to you, or when we met, I just liked how you were very interested in using all your expertise to just affect the places you had stayed in, and especially the places that, you know, may have had to go through some form of challenge, for example, Afghanistan and the war and everything. For me, that was very intriguing, because people tend to, you know, leave their countries and may not have some form of attachment to where they have been, or the or the grievances or the places where they grew up. But for me, that was very, very touching. And it actually, because it made me more Afrocentric to some extent, you know, to always, as I'm thinking about my career, thinking about developing things, also thinking about ways to, you know, affect my village, you know, my village, the little part that I grew up in, Ghana. So that is amazing. So you studied engineering and then strategic planning, all the mixture of that. Where did the entrepreneurial part come in? Where did the entrepreneurial part come in? Like, why did you just feel like you wanted to be an entrepreneur? Where did that all burst out from?
The funny thing is, I never wanted to become an entrepreneur. My father was an engineer. He was in the office in the Afghan socialist regime. It was back time. So he had some political ideas, and he was into engineering. And my mom, she was a professor in veterinary at Kabul University. So I come from a military family and from a doctor's family, because my mom's sister and brothers, all my nieces, they're doctors. So me going into tech entrepreneurship, yeah, I think they see me as a failure. But I do want to make a positive impact to society. I grew up in Netherlands in 2010. I wanted to reconnect with my roots. And those time, I think I was graduating in undergrads in economics. And I made a road trip with my friend from Netherlands to Afghanistan to do some humanitarian assistance, some reconstruction efforts. Also for me personally, to reconnect with my roots, with my heritage. You can imagine growing up in Netherlands, you also realize, wow, I'm so privileged. And I hear all these news about Afghanistan, about this backwarded country, like with extremism or whatever. I wanted to go and check this for myself. And you also have kind of a survival guilt, right? Growing up, realizing, okay, I'm well off. I want to see if I can contribute to economic development, because after I studied economics and I want to do something with this. I made a road trip to Afghanistan. It was amazing. We went through the former Silk Road, and we were 1 month on the road, and I stayed in Afghanistan half year in this village where is my father from. It's in the north of Afghanistan. So that was really great. That was like surrealistic. You're traveling eastward, and it seems like you're back going back in time.
Right.
And in Afghanistan, I was in this village, like almost literally like 2000 before Christ. So they didn't have running water or electricity. Right. And there is like 80% of the people in this valley cannot read and write. So, then I realized, wow, I live in Eindhoven. This is my hometown in the Netherlands. And this is one of the most technologically sophisticated areas in Netherlands, if not in Europe. We have their Philips and offshoots from Philips or ASML,
right?
One of the most important technology companies in Europe right now. So this contrast between this poverty and underdevelopment in Afghanistan and this technologically advancement in Netherlands, this contrast always give me a sense of responsibility. Like, wow. I need to make myself useful to bring this technologies
right.
to developing countries and help other people. So I worked briefly in Afghanistan in humanitarian assistance and in development aid. I also briefly worked in Kosovo and Congo. And so I saw in these developing countries, this the NGO sector or development aid sector. And I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest, because I saw lack of coordination between these NGOs, but also sometimes some kind of paternalism. There are very good people who want to do good things, but sometimes you have this Western neocolonialism mindset, like,
right.
Are we going to teach you how to civilize?
Right. Right.
So I was a little bit disappointed in this, and I realized there is a need for efficiency or leveraging technologies.
Right.
And growing up in Eindhoven, I had a pretty good idea of about the innovation space, about innovating region. So that's actually triggered me to go back, look for my engineering roots,
right.
See if I can jump into this startup bandwagon and with this using technologies for the development aid sector.
Right.
And as an economist, I also noticed in this 40 years of war, there has been 10 million people from Afghanistan leaving the country. And these were notably higher educated people like my parents.
Right.
So
this
is the untapped potential of this country. And how can we facilitate these people to reconstruct their country of origin or contribute to the economic development? And that's how I really got into entrepreneurship, because trying to see like how can we leverage technology to facilitate this brain gain, reconstruction efforts.
Nice. You did mention that you are the founder of Sense AI or Sense AI. I always call it Sense AI. I don't know if we're gonna just get on the bandwagon of everything.ai, because I think at the time it was Sense AI, right? But now it's now. I don't know. Are you going to call it Sense AI?
So the word Sensei means in Japanese.
Sensei. It means what?
It means, actually, literally, it means someone who's older than you. So it's like,
yeah, Sensei. Oh, okay. Ah, so you took it from the idea of Sensei. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I've never
sensei.
Thought of it like, because I do use Sensei a lot.
Yeah. So Sensei Technologies. So growing up in Netherlands, I picked up martial arts. I did judo. I did... sometimes, you know, growing up as an immigrant kid in small villages in the provincial cities or villages, you could encounter exclusion or discrimination. But luckily, sports has been always there, and this also helped me to integrate in the Dutch society, but also build the mental and physical fortitude to defend yourself. And this helped me a lot. I picked up boxing, Thai boxing. And so I always had that thing for martial arts. And I love this Japanese culture and the Bushido philosophy, the samurai doctrine. And so that's why I thought if I set up a company, I call it obviously something related to this. And in those times, I think 5 years ago, I think I set up this company. Or I started with the idea, because registering it was just way later. But yeah, the names come from Japanese Bushido and Sensei, and of course we go along with the marketing bus and we change.
Right. Oh, that is very
Sensei Technologies, and we're an R&D company for sports industry, and we're developing sensors for boxing now. And we're developing, focusing on computer vision, human pose estimation algorithms. The story is, I worked in development assistance and Kosovo, Congo, Afghanistan, and I realized in these countries there's been a lot of conflict, intergenerational violence, and there's a lack of healthcare facilities, and specifically a lack of mental health facilities and infrastructure. And overall, there is a shame or a stigma on mental health. Imagine a country like Afghanistan went through 43 years of war. So there's obviously a lot of trauma, intergenerational violence. But there's absolutely no culture of talking about this or addressing this. And there is no funding or support around trauma intervention. So I did the competitive boxing in the Netherlands. I had a great boxing trainer. I got 12 pairs of gloves, and I bring this to Afghanistan. It was 2010. It was. I was giving kids boxing classes, and I realized, like, wow, this is amazing. I'm contributing to community building, healing, and using sports for development. So this would inspire me to set up this company, and I thought of a concept that was during a hackathon to actually make a connected punching bag from used car tires, so I could train my cousins on distance. So I've been trying to validate this concept and get for it, and this led to, you know, this evolves, and now we're working on R&D and computer vision. The initial idea was I wanted to just reconnect with my family and give kids boxing classes and support for development, and using technology to facilitate this process.
That is impressive. That is super impressive. So let's just, you know, get a bit more into this whole entrepreneurial bit. So venture capital, we do hear VC a lot. We hear it all over. Can you just explain it to, you know, a layman or people who are just, you know, hearing this new VC going on? If you could just explain it to us, what is VC about? What is venture capital?
Well, these are investors. They are specialist investors who have an appetite for high risk, for high gain. So imagine I have this idea. I want to make a smart punching bag to go give kids some distance boxing classes in Afghanistan. If I go to the bank and say, hey, can you give me a 100K loan to build this venture? And the bank will tell me to F off, you know, like, what the hell? Like, you know, it's too high risk for you guys. On the other hand, you have specialist bankers or investors called venture capitalists. So they obviously have some kind of expertise or somehow they manage to pull money from whoever, from other investors, and they're investing in startups, and usually tech savvy startups. Right. The idea to make money off that. So these are specialist investors, venture capitalists.
Right. So I do hear these two terms: angel investment and venture capital. Are they the same? Are they different? Do they have the same goal? Yeah, if you can just demystify that for me.
So I think there are different profiles. So in traditional sense of saying, venture capitalists, they're specialist investors. They want to get your equity and in return, they invest in your company and help you off the ground. But usually you have to convince them that you don't need them, that you have already attraction, that you have that you already have a product or have customers. So I think the venture capital will come later in your financial needs as an entrepreneur. On the other hand, angel investors, so they're more Maybe they invest smaller tickets, but they want to help you to get take off the ground and not necessarily
Right.
to take make a lot of money
Okay.
on you.
Right.
So that's the difference, I think. So you rather first go to friends, family, angel investors.
Right.
So
Right.
there are different stage of financiers or investors. And I think VCs, they come in a later stage once you have a
Right.
friend, you have a
Once you have more
father.
structure, once.
Yes, you have some
Right.
structure,
Okay.
you're mature, but still, you're still looking for your product market fit.
Right.
And you have this early stage VCs, and then you have your later stage VCs, VCs who
Right.
invest to help you grow rapidly.
Right.
But yeah, you rather want to go first to talk to angel investors, people you know, people who would care about your cause or your venture, more on a
Right.
personal level. So yeah, that's why the name angel, you know, they're saving you, helping you.
Okay, right. So let's just talk about, investing a little bit. What do you think are some of the key factors, maybe in you, in your life, in your personal life, that you look out for before investing into something new, like maybe an innovation? Say you find yourself in that space of having to invest in something. What are some of the key things that you look out for?
Well, personally, I'm very much interested in social and environmental impact. I
Right.
told you I went through migration background and coming from a war-torn society. We were very privileged to grow up in Netherlands. We get opportunities, and I'm grateful for the society, for the Dutch society, for embracing us. So with that comes a kind of a survival guilt and some kind of a social responsibility. So hence, I wanted to contribute to for social causes such as integration of immigrants, but also peace and reconstruction efforts in developing countries. So my personal conviction and is like, okay, impact investing or impact. So I'm looking for entrepreneurs who want to solve complex socio-economic
Right.
problems. So that's my personal belief, and I'm working in that, and I'm helping and coaching other startup founders with that conviction.
Right.
But yeah, there are a lot of interesting verticals or industries or technologies. So every investor have their own preferences
Right.
and strategic goals, right?
That's nice. So tech and innovation or entrepreneurship and diversity, we say the world is a global village, right? Everyone is, different. I'm sure we've probably seen it in Paris a lot, where after walking down the street, you're going to see people with different skin color, different looks whatsoever. How do you think diversity really, is going to champion this, like drives innovation in our society today?
Well, the whole, if you look at the innovation process, the more ideas, the better, right? And if this pool of ideas come from different segments of society, people with different backgrounds, with different cultural backgrounds, but also disciplinary
Right.
backgrounds, and we can select the best ideas from those, right? And that's the, I think for me, that's the argument for diversity and inclusion in the tech and innovation space. Obviously, there is the social justice argument. Okay, why only a privileged hetero white male from Silicon Valley produce all technology for a woman, for people of color in other parts of the world? That
Yeah.
doesn't make always sense, right? So we should have equality to produce technology rather than merely
Right.
consume.
Right.
That's the social justice argument, but I rather want to focus on the economic argument for inclusion in tech and innovation.
Right.
Look at France, for example. They're making explicit policy to have more diversity and inclusion in the tech and innovation space. Because there are in the suburbs of Paris, there's a lot of people who never, like who have less opportunities
Right.
to integrate in the French society, but also
Right.
be tech entrepreneur because the barriers towards entry is huge. It could be huge. Nevertheless, that's why there is need for corrective policy to facilitate that more segments of our society are able to be to leverage technology to create value for society.
Right.
So, in other words, not all founders are equal.
Right.
If you're, for example, a woman founder or someone from a ethnic background, yeah, you could have less access to strategic resources to start a venture. People could disproportionately question your authority, legitimacy, deter you from starting your venture. So there is much to say about inclusion, the innovation and tech industry.
Right.
Awesome. I mean, currently we all know the world needs more entrepreneurs, right? If the world is to move forward, I think entrepreneurs are the people who define and so sort of shape how the world becomes. They are the backbone of every economy, as we can tell. But that being said, can anyone become an entrepreneur, or do you need some specific skills or talent to become an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. I've been looking into literature on entrepreneurship, and this is still the debating going on. Is are you born with entrepreneurial genetics, or can you actually learn entrepreneurship?
Right.
Well, personally, I believe that you can learn entrepreneurship, but you need to be exposed to some kind of pressure or some kind of environment. So the necessity is mother of invention. If you look at successful entrepreneurs, they went through some kind of experiences that actually made them to become entrepreneurs. So I think you can definitely learn it. Nevertheless, the ecosystem, your environment, could help you shape your character, personality. So I think everybody can learn, but not everybody should, because I think it's not meant for everybody. So you do need to have some kind of personality traits, right? So there's still ongoing debate on, is it innate entrepreneurship? Personally, I believe you can learn it. And if you look at successful entrepreneurs, nobody can do these things alone, right? There is a need for social structure around you, support, so emotional support, because entrepreneurship is also an emotional roller coaster. But I think if you look into this immigrant background or immigrant experiences, I think my parents, for me, they were entrepreneurs, even though they didn't go into venture. But the decision to decide, like, okay, we're going to leave this part of the world and we're going to go into some new part of the world, which we don't know, but we believe that there might be better chances for us. So that's itself is a risk-taking behavior. So they expose themselves to this kind of risk and maybe not themselves, but us, it made us more entrepreneurial and seeking for opportunities. But yeah, I think you definitely can learn entrepreneurship. There is there's a lot of opportunities these days. Societies are realizing this, to creating decent policies, but also educating the population to be more entrepreneurial.
Awesome. So, I mean, if entrepreneurs are out there, if you're an entrepreneur and you're listening, what Yama said, it's not like you are born to be an entrepreneur. You can actually become one. Well, I think there are many factors that determines the flow of an entrepreneur, but basically, I think everyone can become an entrepreneur. So, another question is that, so now that we are all becoming entrepreneurs, right?
With the right skills, to be fair.
With the right skills.
No, I said everybody can become an entrepreneur if they really want to learn.
Yeah.
But I don't think everybody should become entrepreneurs.
Yes. So let's all assume that we all want to become entrepreneurs in this case.
Yeah. Now that we all want to become entrepreneurs, I want to become an entrepreneur.
Okay.
And now we all want to become entrepreneurs, Yama. So if anyone could start a new business today, what will you recommend that they start with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, early on, I mentioned actually, I shared with you my own entrepreneurial journey. I actually never wanted to become an entrepreneur. I just got into this because I work in development assistance and I saw a lot of issues there, and I thought I can do this better, or you know, you're encountering a problem. So I think successful entrepreneurs, they fall rather in love with the problem rather than a product they're building. So aspiring entrepreneurs, I think you should focus on understanding the complexities of a problem that you really, really want to solve, and you need to fall in love with this problem and understand the customer needs and the market dynamics. And so my advice would be is to focus rather than on building a product, rather focus on understanding deeply some kind of problem you want to solve, really.
Awesome. I mean, I loved what you talked about, focusing on the problem, right? Focusing on solving the problem. But with any business, you also need to make profits, right? I think every business needs a profit. If you are going for funding, if you are trying to secure funding, I mean, most investors or most VCs need to know that your business is viable, right? And then they are not wasting their money. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, how do you sort of balance the pursuit of profits, right, with addressing the social and environmental issues that you have your business set up to deal with?
Yeah, you said it very well. So I'm telling you about my business. So the problem I'm addressing is mental wellness, well-being, and the social stigma around that. Initially, I wanted to address mental health, mental well-being in conflict-affected communities, refugees, but obviously, trying to build some connected punching bag from used car tires to address also environmental issues. Soon you realized exactly like, okay, this is very hard to make money with. Then I realized, okay, I'm really passionate about this social impact. I still want to do this. This is the starting point of my journey. To finance this, I need to serve higher end in this pyramid. So to finance my social mission, I'm selling services to companies. So we are a specialist in computer vision, human pose estimation. We have the French Boxing Federation as our client, for example. We were developing AI solutions. So we're selling services, or we are developing some wellness, well-being for corporates, for the corporate sector to prevent burnout. So I'm selling wellness solutions higher end. And with that, I can ask a little bit premium. And with that, we are financing sport for development and less privileged communities. But as you said, it's very hard to find this balance between for-profit and non-profit. And this is the struggle of many social entrepreneurs like myself. If I'm economically rational, I focus only, serving the higher end of the market. I can make money. But I'm also passionate about making a social impact and serving the less privileged people. So the key is to find this balance. And as you said, not all venture capitalists or investors could care about the social impact. But I'm very happy that more and more investors are having a focus on social environmental impact. So these are called impact investors. And I think there's also a need for more policy on this to facilitate this. You can give tax cuts or incentives that people invest in social ventures or social entrepreneurs, because that's exactly what our society needs. So that's what I would answer to your question.
That's amazing. That's amazing, Yama. So let's just get a bit into your personal journey. What's the best and worst investment you've ever made? Let's start with the worst. What's the worst investment you've ever made?
Worst. No, I haven't been into the investment game. So I did 1 year venture capital traineeship. It's called Included VC. It's an initiative by by 12 European VCs. So they want to foster more venture capitalists, you know, because usually VCs they are from privileged backgrounds and small circles, and through this initiative they want to create more investors from non-traditional backgrounds, like people from color or women or from LGBTQ community. It's a great initiative, Included VC. You can apply for it if you're an aspiring venture capitalist. So I did this fellowship, and I meet a lot of amazing people, like great fellows. I made a great connection in this industry with the VC industry, understanding the other side of the table. But same time, I've been trying to raise funds for my own startup. So I embarked temporary to learn to be a VC. So I didn't pursue this. So I thought, okay, I will. I want to break through with my own startup in a few years. Hopefully, I'll have an exit, and then I will start investing. But yeah, so then you can work in a VC or set up your own funds if you have money. So I've been now mostly busy with my own venture, Sensei Technologies. We're launching different products, and soon I'll go to the Netherlands. I have a client there with Maastricht University. I'm very proud of that. We're going to address the mental health of students using boxing therapeutically. We're researching AI and boxing to address mental health. But nevertheless, myself, last 5 years, I'm in this roller coaster of a startup entrepreneurship. In the process, I learned so much, and of course, you don't need to have money or have a venture cap, be in a venture capital to start investing. You can also start investing in people through your social capital or your creative energy. So I'm coaching other startups and sharing my experiences, my mistakes, and in this way, I see it also considered us also as a as an investment. So, for example, I'm coaching Yusuf, who's a great entrepreneur in Paris, and he started this venture called My Paris Concierge. So he's helping expats who want to resettle in France, helping them, and I'm coaching him, for example. A friend of mine, I'm helping him with his restaurant business, his Afghan origins, and he wants to share with the French the Afghan cuisine. So that's actually, yeah. So I'm investing my time, my energy, my network, and this way, you also need to build credibility to become a VC. But I hope in 4 or 5 years, I will go into professional investing. But first, I need to focus on my own startup, and hopefully I will have an exit soon, and then I'll set up my own VC or join a VC, and I will definitely invest. But if I would I'm definitely would invest in sports tech and social impact angle.
That's nice. That's nice. So we've spoken a lot about, VC, Sensei, Netherlands, and all that. What do you do to wind down? What do you do to, relax? What does your leisure time look like? I know you love boxing because I do remember you told me, and I have seen a few pictures of yours. You even invited me, but obviously, as one who is not very sportive, I saw that that invitation and didn't come. My clean wants to laugh at me here because he knows that sports is not very much my forte. But yeah, but Yama, tell us, apart from sports, what do you do as leisure?
Well, I love traveling. I think traveling it helps me to get new ideas, meet new people. So I love to travel, but mostly it's for work. So I think it's less leisure. I love playing chess, by the way. So I don't know if you consider sports, but I love playing chess. I really, really enjoy doing that. I'm not that very good at, but I'm trying to learn every day. I read a little bit. I read now and then when I have time. Yeah, unfortunately, I was not very musical, but now and then I try to catch up and I learn some music. I know you're very much
Oh,
into music.
nice.
Raymond, you can teach me
Well,
some.
definitely. I think that I was actually getting there, because when I was talking about sports, I was talking about physical sport, like one that requires you to expend a lot of energy. There, I don't know, I just tend to have a little phobia. But then, speaking about chess, I have a friend that I can introduce you to. But for music, I am here. I'm here at any time to
Yeah.
support
No, that's
you.
what I love about being in Paris. There's a lot of arts and culture. That's really great compared to the city I come from, Eindhoven. It's like more high tech and a little bit design cluster there. In Paris, you get exposed to a lot of culture and arts.
Right.
Yesterday at the Montmartre, I was at the concert. It was amazing. I really loved it. It reminded me. Sometimes it's challenging being in France because we have the language barrier and
Yeah.
culture barrier, especially when it comes to entrepreneurship. Obviously, there's a good policy by the president Macron to catch up. He wants to build a startup nation. Yet, I think it takes some time before the culture and mindset change. And so
Right.
meanwhile, we have to endure a little bit more. But yeah,
Right.
these little moments, I went to this nice concert, open air concert at Montmartre. And it was so lovely. That's why I realized, like, wow, I love being in France. I love being in Paris. You get exposed to a lot of culture and art.
I definitely should visit again. I know I kind of miss Paris a little bit. So maybe this time I'm coming with McLean. You get to see this brilliant mind here.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, and Yama, I think the previous question, you were talking about something like trying to secure funding and all for your startup, right? Which I find it quite interesting, because I mean, I know a couple of people who have businesses that they're also trying to secure funding from, you know, angel investors, VCs, whatever. So what advice will you give to people like these who are trying to sort of secure funding to push their startup, to push their scale-ups, and basically to push their businesses?
Yeah, obviously. So the thing is that any investor would like to know, would be reassured, or would like to. Of course, there's a risk involved, right? There's every investor, you know, they know there's no such thing as no risk. But of course, every investor, they want to minimize the risk. So you need to, as an entrepreneur, as a startup founder, you need to signal. You need to signal that you know what you're talking about, that you are delicate with this guy's money or this woman's money, and that you did a proper market study, that you know your clients, and that you actually can execute on your idea, because everybody can have great ideas. So investors, specifically venture capitalists, they know they're investing in dreams, right, in concepts. But they need to see that you can follow up on this, right? That you can execute, that you can actually build a team, that you have the expertise. So these are little signals that investors want to see. So that's why a good pitch deck is very important, and a good pitch deck. You signal your value, you signal that you know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, previously you had business plans, but it's a little bit outdated, the business plans, right? Because in our world now, these days, there's things evolve so fast. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think if you have traditional business, you go to a bank, they definitely want to see a 200-page business plan. But you go to an investor, you should show a very, very good, well thought through pitch deck, right? Where you elaborate on the problem you're addressing, who you are, your team, that you have the competences, and that you know the market is there, that you actually validated your business hypothesis.
Right.
So a good pitch deck is a good start. Yeah.
Awesome. That's nice.
Yeah, so talk of pitching and again securing funding. I mean, these days the it's like the latest kid on the block or the new kid on the block is AI and blockchain, right? I mean, during the last Google I/O, right, the keynote speech given, I think AI was mentioned over 140 times, right? Which means it's sort of the new thing disrupting the whole entrepreneurship ecosystem. So what advice will you give to entrepreneurs? How can they prepare for the potential disruptions of the VC ecosystem by these new kids, both blockchain and AI?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm more a generalist economist and engineer. I did industrial engineering, so I'm not like specialist in one technologies. So I have my CTO taking care of that. I think I'm more technology agnostic. Yes, this AI and especially this generative AI is incredible, and it seems to be the new buzzword. I remember 1 year, 1.5 year, it was the crypto buzz. So there will be always this kind of buzz, and we have to be also thoughtful about this. But nevertheless, I do think this what's happening with this ChatGPT and this generative AI is absolutely a game changer. I think you do well to learn about this industry and seek opportunities, because it's I'm still comprehending what it unfolds, right? This is also for my business, for my startup. I already like when starting even in the name, it was 5 years ago, we were already involved in this AI. I had this vision like, okay, in coaching or therapy, we can use automation and do the boring task using AI. So definitely there is a lot of opportunities in this industry. So you need to seek, like how can we use AI and which problems does it solve? So I think rather than going only with the buzzwords, you also need to see, okay, what problem am I going to solve? That's doesn't change at all. I think that's still stands.
Right, that's nice. And to end today's episode, just tell us, you know, whet our appetite a bit, Sensei or Sensei or Sense AI, whichever way I like to call it. What's the next exciting thing people should look forward to? I know you did mention a few, you gave a few hints, but what's the next exciting thing that people who would love to, you know, have this great innovation in their corner? What exciting thing should we look forward to?
Yeah, I think you cannot, it's the elephant in the room. I think you cannot escape this generative AI. I think it's incredible. Like, wow. I want to have a little talk at the opening of the academic year at Maastricht University. And I'll be talking about, I'm researching about this, about AI and education. Like, you know, why would you still go to a physical building like universities if the best content or learning opportunities could be personalized for you online. So personally, I still believe that institutions like universities still have their place. Nevertheless, they have to reconsider their role. I believe that also with this generative AI and all this violence around, like what's coming every day to us, it's also very hard to keep up, to be honest. I would definitely consider emotional intelligence, psychology. I think this is going to be more and more important. Obviously, my startup is into the mental health space. So I would definitely advise people to look into this industry, like how AI, how these new technologies can help us to deal with this disruption in our mind, right? Like this is so much information coming at us. How do we still stay sane? And also a lot of people are going to lose their job and or have to or forced to learn new things, unlearn a lot of things and learn new things. And this will bring a lot of change, and usually people don't like change. So I think this gives also an opportunity for people to address this this discomfort a lot of people are going to face. There's already a lot of anxiety among students. In 4 or 5 years, am I graduating? There will be any job for me? So I think industry is going to be disrupted, and there's a lot of change. So I think there are a lot of opportunities if you are an entrepreneur and combining AI for our mental health, mental wellness to deal with this disruption the world is facing.
Right. Yama, every time I talk with you, I just know that I'm going to be enlightened. You just have a great personality, great drive, and you know, very focused, set your face like a flint, and it's very, 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 it's always nice. And just thank you too, you know, for making those last days in France very manageable. I think having, you know, you in my corner was very, very helpful. And I look forward to seeing you again.
Likewise, man. Thank you so much for having me in your show. It's really great, man, what you're doing. We need to democratize access to technology, and you're doing that, man. You're giving people like me a voice, and you are amplifying it to another audience. So I really wish you a lot of luck, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you and hearing more from you and your show. Thank you so much again for having me. Also, pleasure meeting you, McLean.
Pleasure.
Thank you. All right. As the sports industry embraces the AI wave, and as entrepreneurs come up with new ideas, Yama reminds us that the key thing that will set you apart as an entrepreneur is to be passionate about the problem you're trying to solve, and not just be attached to the product you are creating. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the TechSurf Podcast. See you in the next episode.